We're less than 2 hours out from the first pitch in what is now distilled to a best-of-three games to crown the 2013 World Series champion team. Baseball fans poring over St. Louis Cardinals and Boston Red Sox team and player stats could scarcely have predicted the wild finishes over the weekend, and that includes Mount Airy resident and mathematical whiz Sean Forman, founder of BaseballReference.com. Sean, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
What compelled you to start Baseball Reference, and what is it?
Well, Baseball Reference is basically, if you remember back, they used to publish these giant encyclopedias of baseball stats, and we've basically taken all of that and put it into a website. And really, it was just, I've always had a love of numbers, a love of baseball, and I had some free time while I was in graduate school, avoiding my dissertation, and created the site, and it's kind of just grown organically since then.
Now, fans well-versed in ERA and RBI numbers can delve into much more esoteric categories with your site.
Yeah, we really try to cover the game from all directions. We definitely have what's called a sabermetric bent, which is the analysis of baseball stats. And really, it's all about just trying to understand what the numbers tell us about the quality of the players. So, you know, RBIs are kind of an overrated stat because it depends on what what the player's teammates did. If you don't have anybody on base, you can't get very many RBIs. So we're trying to come up with statistics that kind of remove that context from the player performance and give you a clearer view of who's good and who's not.
Leaders in both clubhouses, David Ortiz obviously right. comes to mind, and he's having a fabulous World Series. Mm-hmm. And then there's established leaders like him and Adam Wainwright for the Cardinals, and then the juxtaposition with youth. There's this pitching phenom who's 22 years old for the Cardinals and a 21-year-older playing third base for right. Red Sox. How about that mix? How is that accounted for?
Right. Well, in terms of talent, it's really about talent. I mean, Xander Bogaerts is just a phenomenally talented third baseman. He's going to be a shortstop next year for the Red Sox. But he, coming up throughout his career, he's performed very well at every level, and he's just doing it again at the major leagues. And then Michael Wacha, the pitcher for the Cardinals, 22 years old, just out of Texas A&M last year. He performed very well in college, and his skills have translated very well to the major leagues. And the Cardinals, I'm always amazed by the Cardinals because their draft picks, they always seem to hit all their draft picks, and they always seem to work out to be pretty good major leaguers.
I imagine some Phillies fans on the fence are tilting their allegiance to the Red Sox because of former Philly Shane Victorino, and I would sense that his numbers aren't always accurately reflected in the total value he brings to the club.
He's players who do a little bit of everything really well tend to be undervalued, and he's kind of a player who does a lot of different things well. He's a good hitter. He's a very good base runner, pretty good defender, and so he contributes across the board, and so those players tend to be a little bit undervalued by their fans because you can't just point to one thing and say, he's the best at that. So he's definitely a strong contributor for the Sox, and I'm sure they're hoping that his back is feeling better soon.
So we all know the Triple Crown, and from your perspective, that might be rather simplistic: batting average, RBIs, and home runs. What is a key statistic that one can now look at that would give a better idea of a hitter's value?
Well, I'd say the one number that I would look at would be on-base percentage. Teams that get on base, there's a very strong correlation between teams that get on base and teams that score runs. So it's, even more so than home runs and batting average, on-base percentage, which is, I guess I should explain, it's the number of times you get on base divided by the number of plate appearances you have. So it's very similar to batting average, but it adds in walks, hit by pitches, things of that nature. So that number alone really gives you a very good picture of how good an offense is. And one of the struggles the Phillies had this past year is that they just didn't have enough guys who got on base.
That number, though, doesn't favor either the hits or the walks. And what comes to
right.
mind is, short of this year, Ichiro Suzuki was a hitting genius, but
right.
he didn't walk very much.
Right. So his on-base percentage was good because he had often would have a 330, 350 batting average. But he didn't draw a lot of walks. So he's a player that sabermetricians would probably point to as being somewhat overrated and not as good as maybe his reputation would seem to imply.
Now let's look at pitchers. There are any number of them, including Cole Hamels, who over the years have had, what's this category spells out WAR, wins above replacement.
So as long as there's been baseball analysis, there's been an attempt to rank players 1 through 100 or 1 through 1,000. And so we have a stat. There are a couple versions of it, but ours, it's called wins above replacement or WAR. And basically the idea is to say, if you were to replace this player with somebody from AAA, somebody who, you know, every team has in their minor league affiliate, you know, how many wins would your team lose? So if you take a player like, you know, I think the best player for the Phillies this past year is Cliff Lee. He's worth 6 wins above what we imagine a AAA pitcher would add to the bottom line. So that doesn't mean his win-loss record necessarily indicates that, but overall win totals for the team are reflected by that increase in wins that he gives the team.
Baseball, compared to when I grew up, is increasingly international, obviously Latin America, and much more so now in Asia. Do you compile those numbers as well?
We just added complete stats back to 1938 for Nippon Pro Baseball. So we have Japanese stats. We have Sadahara O's stats. We have...
You have former Philly Dick Stewart, who played for the Hiroshima Carp.
We would have those in there, yes. So Charlie Manuel is another one who played overseas. So we've added those. We don't have Korea yet. We have some Italian, some Dutch. So it's definitely growing, and if somebody's producing baseball stats out there, we want to have them on the site.
How do you foresee this site in 5 or 10 years?
Well, I mean, one of the amazing things about baseball is that it seems like they're already collecting all the possible numbers that they can, but, you know, there's a lot more that's going to be done. For example, there's a company in San Francisco, Sport Vision, that's starting to install cameras around the stadiums and track the position of each player on the field for each second of the game.
So they toward can what end?
Well, so for example, when a ball's hit up the middle, they'll be able to tell you fairly accurately how many feet Jimmy Rollins traveled to field that ball, how long it took him to travel that time, what his release time was, how long it took him to the throw from him to first base took.
But isn't that often dictated by the managers back in the dugout who instruct their players where to position themselves based on the hitter?
That's true. But one of the things people often say about the statistics is you can't measure defense because, you know, positioning is important, where the ball's hit is important. And you can do some things around that, and people have tried, and I think to fairly good success. But with a system where you can actually track positions exactly, you get to a situation where I can say, well, you know, this ball was hit here, the distance was 20 feet, Brendan Ryan made the play. Jimmy Rollins didn't make the play. So I'm going to credit Brendan Ryan with a play saved there. So you can kind of it'll be easier to establish a baseline as to what a major league shortstop can do and what each player is doing relative to the other major league shortstops.
When this season started more than half a year ago, did you think that the Boston Red Sox would emerge from last to even competing for a playoff spot?
No, I thought they would probably be like it. I thought they could be an 85-win team. If you look at the Red Sox, though, even last year, if all of their players basically had bad years, and if you look at the amount of talent they had on the team, it was a very talented team. I mean, each of those players, if you look at their career best years, you know, were potential all-stars or were all-stars. So they definitely were a talented team. The fact that John Farrell deserves a lot of credit for kind of, you know, giving everybody I think this is a case where a positive attitude probably helped and, you know, cleaning house probably helped. And basically letting the players, you know, perform to their talent levels was a big part of it, and putting the players out there who were talented and making sure that they got playing time. So I'm not super shocked that they made the playoffs, but it definitely is surprising. It's not like I had $1,000 on the Red Sox to make the World Series. So it's definitely a surprising outcome.
I've heard of interference, never obstruction.
It's a very rare play. I looked through our database, and there were only 5 obstruction plays in the major leagues this year.
Have there ever been any to close a game out, though?
We only found one. So obstruction is not – technically it shows up as an error. So I suspect there are a number of games. You know, the rule comes up because in the late 1800s, the game was much rougher than it was now.
So, think Ty Cobb.
Right. Ty Cobb, guys, John McGraw was kind of the worst when he was a player. So they would grab players by the belt as they rounded the bases. They would stand in the base paths and not let them go by, and all kinds of things like that. So it was, the obstruction rules came up because of that. So I suspect if we were to have a complete database of play-by-play, there were probably a lot of obstruction plays called in the 1910s, 1920s. But for the records we have, there was a game in 2004 where a Mariners third baseman stood in front of a base runner to keep him from seeing a ball being caught by the outfielder so he could tag up. And the umpire called obstruction on that play and allowed the runner to score, which ended the game. So
the neat thing is it's not a judgment call, apparently, on the part of the ump. It's if the ball is no longer in play for that fielder and the obstruction takes place, intent doesn't matter.
Intent does not matter. So, I mean, the key here is if the fielder is going for the ball, he has every right to get the ball. And then the runner actually can interfere with the fielder, and you'll see interference called on occasion on the runners. However, if he misses the ball, it's his job to get out of the way of the runner. And in the play, I mean, it was unfortunate. Will Middlebrooks wasn't intentionally trying to obstruct the runner. But based on how the play unfolded, he basically just ended up laying in the way of the runner. And had no chance to get out of the way. So I really feel it was the right call. Now, if the runner had been out by 50 feet at home, they might have still called him out. But it was a very close play, and in the umpire's judgment, he would have been safe without the obstruction, so they called him safe. It was, as a owner of a website that deals in baseball history and baseball statistics, that was good for business, but I'm not sure it was necessarily the outcome baseball wanted at that time.
That was Saturday night and might have been good for business last night when the game ended on a pickoff. How often does that happen?
That does not happen. That's the first postseason game-ending pickoff. I was looking through the database, and in 1936 there was a caught stealing that ended game four, I believe, of the World Series. And then probably the most famous base-running gaffe was Babe Ruth in 1926 was caught stealing to actually end the World Series. So it's very rare for something like that to happen, and I'm sure it's fortunate for Colton Wong because the runner who was picked off because he made a fantastic defensive play in Game Three that saved the Cardinals some runs. So hopefully he'll bounce back, and he's a talented player. I'm sure he'll be fine.
Sean, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight. That's Mount Airy resident and mathematical whiz Sean Foreman, founder of BaseballReference.com.